Like to share two or three stories with you because I don't make it here very often. And for those who heard the story, I think 2 days ago, you can hear it again. Oftentimes, people donate many books and tapes to the seminary. These are things they collected over the years, and some people have collected quite a collection. And I remember receiving a garbage bag full of cassette tapes on sermons. I mean, without exaggerating, but kind of exaggerating, there was less than a million in that garbage bag. And I was like, when am I going to ever hear all these tapes or use them? And they're cassettes, they're not CDs. So I kind of went through it very superficially, and then they gave it to one seminary and said, we'll give it to the priest, they can just go through this. But something caught my attention. There was the name of an old priest from North Dakota. And it has his name, and it said sermon, and it said 82 minutes. And I was like, now that was a sermon. I don't think any of our priests would ever do that. I'm sure they wouldn't. But if they ever did, I'd really appreciate a call from you folks, because we're going to be starting a new mission to Somalia. Okay? We would send them to Somalia. 82-minute sermon, not way too long. The other thing I want to share with you, and it just shows the grace of God is still very abundantly working out there. I received a text message from a young man who lives in Dodge City, Kansas. Dodge City is in the southwest corner of Kansas, out in the sticks. Not a very big town. But the interesting thing about him, he's 17. He was 17, just turned 18. But he was going to the modern mass, the Novus Ordo, and perchance, totally accidentally, but certainly providentially, he ran across in the back of the church an old Latin missal. And he picked this up and he thought, what kind of a prayer book is this? He saw that there was Latin on one side and English on the other. And at first he thought, well, this is more developed mass, not like what I'm used to, what I grew up with. But he then began to realize, well, this is probably the way the mass had been always offered. And then things changed. But he was very curious to go through that mass, like, what a difference there is. As a 17-year-old kid, totally on his own. So he gets on the internet and Googles Latin Mass, and everything just jumps out at him. And he starts to read this and that, and realizes there's a real problem with the new Mass. And he keeps digging, he keeps searching. And then he started looking to where is the Latin Mass in his area. And we do have a Mass out there every Sunday off of Interstate 70. A chapel, maybe a little distant from him. So he told his mom, he said, I don't want to go to this new Mass anymore, I want to go to Latin Mass. His mother, very, very skeptical. I since talked to him on the phone, he said that his mother barely, if any, even remembers the Latin Mass. And she said, no, you can't go anywhere. If you want to go when you're 18, fine, but as long as you're in this house and you're underage, you're not going to Latin Mass. Not because she was opposed to it, but she just didn't understand. So he finally got his opportunity to go to Latin Mass for the first time. He'd gone to three Masses now. But the amazing thing is, when he texted me, he said, I've been in contact with, you know, some of our parishioners there in Gorham, Kansas, where we have our chapel. And he said he's very interested in the priesthood. And I'm thinking that this is an amazing story of grace. Living out in the sticks, but a person of goodwill in God's grace comes to him, his moment of grace, the Latin Mass book, and pursues that, and now he understands the problems of the church, and he understands exactly what is happening in the Catholic Church. Here's a young man that had no background in the Latin Mass, no background in the traditional faith, But the little scraps that he would gather here and there, maybe from his catechism or what his mother taught him, and then that moment of grace has come, and he definitely wants to pursue a vocation. So if you could please pray for his name is Damien. Pray for Damien in Dodge City, Kansas. I'd also like to go into a third story, and that we'll get into what I'd like to speak about, and that is the beautiful altar and side altars that you have here. I don't know if anyone ever explained where these came from, but there's a place, Missouri Valley, Iowa, and there was a museum there. I don't know all the details about the museum except for that. There was an old couple, old Catholic couple. They were, I think, very wealthy. And what they wanted to do was to preserve the traditional faith as best they could. So they bought this property, built this huge, huge building, and they set up in that building a church just the way it used to be. They purchased these side altars, the main altar of a church that was closing down. So they basically set up a church just the way it used to be, with the communion rail, the altars, the statues, etc. They also had a library. They had a lot of spiritual reading books there. They even put a museum. They even put in a museum, a theater, so they can show religious movies and such. It was for them a desire to preserve what was being lost. Unfortunately, though, in fact, they had a sign on Interstate I-29, when you go north to Sioux City from Omaha, they had a sign, religious museum, that told you how to get there. But because over the years, not very many people went there, very few, and you have to heat the place, you have to air condition the place, you have to pay staff to staff their religious goods, they had a religious goods store there. They ran out of money, they started going into debt. The older couple had passed away, and so their foundation, their trust, came to the realization, we cannot continue this museum. It's financially not possible. So they sold the property, put it up for sale, and then they sold everything in it. Our priest went there, and our sisters went there, and it was like kids in the candy store. You're getting things for next to nothing. Ciborium, gold ciborium, silver base, 50 cents. So I was not the first one to go there, but I can tell from the priests, they're like, you gotta go, you gotta see. They're giving away vestments for a dollar. It's like, they had all these vestments on display to try to remind the people the way the church used to be. The older couple, they were older and they passed away. Their desire was to preserve the faith. But the tragedy is that a museum, as much as it might remind, as much as it might remind people about the way the church used to be and the faith, a museum is just that, just a museum. What we need to do to preserve the Catholic faith is we need the living, mystical body of Christ. We need the clergy, we need the religious, we need good Catholic families, we need good Catholic laity. And we need to pass that faith on to our young. I have to laugh. When I look at our school, we have a school that started out very simple with 8 kids in the basement of the rectory in 1987. Really has expanded very wonderfully, over 100 children now, and those little kids that we started the school with are now adults, and their kids are going to our school, and they're like chips off the old block, less like their mom, just like their dad. In fact, I don't know, I'm going to see, this might not be the best thing, but I have to tell you, how we started the school, I'm flying in from Spokane to Omaha after we gave them some lectures in the Midwest, and there was new people, and telling them I'd be back in a couple months for a Mass, but not cut it, so I figured you can count on a Mass every Sunday. In 1987, we needed to sign some paperwork with Lincoln, Nebraska, the state capital, to get the school going, and I did not have the time, because the Mass circuit was so extensive that as soon as I landed, I was going, Masses in these different places, and come back, have a Mass, and then fly back to Spokane. I'll never forget, I had 1 hour to catch my flight. It was a Sunday. It was kind of late afternoon. Getting a quick bite to eat before I went to the airport. And there was just a little two-year-old, or three-year-old. He had wanted to go outside and play with the other children on the swing. I won't mention any names to protect his identity. But I asked his mother, Mother's Teresa, I said, Teresa, can I take him out? She said, sure. So I took this little boy out, we're swinging on the swings, and he messed his diaper. He not only messed his diaper, but he also kind of messed me up too. And I couldn't make my flight, so I had to stay overnight, and we got the school established. We got the paperwork done in Lincoln, Nebraska. This young man is now, I think, in his maybe his early to mid-30s, and I tell his kids in school, your daddy helped start the school. But I won't tell you how. Providential, right? Providential. So, interestingly, we have to remind ourselves about the importance that our youth are the future of the church, and how important it is that we invest the time, the energy, and we create that Catholic atmosphere. That's why it gives me great joy to come to Mary Immaculate Queen Church here, see the school, see the parish, and see the faith being passed on. It does me really good to see this, because this is the future of the church. And let us not underestimate the importance of creating that Catholic atmosphere. They say you are what you eat. Eat junk food, you're going to have health problems. Well, if we expose ourselves to good Catholic influences, provide the Mass and sacraments regularly, confession regularly, devotions, processions, do those things throughout the Catholic year that are Catholic practices, it's going to be embedded in the hearts and minds of our children, so that hopefully in the future, we know that it will always be there, no matter what course or what decision they make in life. They have that foundation to fall back on. And we should never underestimate the power of our Blessed Mother. I know you've heard this story many a time, but I'll tell you two parts of the story. As you know, Father Clement Kubisch, those of you who are old-timers remember him. He was from Omaha, Nebraska. He was kicked out of the diocese, the Archdiocese of Omaha, by Bishop Sheehan. And that was in the early 70s. Father Clement Kubisch never offered the Novus Ordo, never offered the modern Mass. The only thing he had ever done, because he was being ordered by the Archbishop, on one occasion he offered Mass face to the people, and he felt so awkward after that he never did it again. In fact, he started a sermon. The very next Sunday he starts a sermon like this. He's facing the altar and the back of the people. He says, does this seem strange for me to give a sermon like this? He says, what's really strange for me to be facing you when I'm supposed to be facing the altar when I pray to God. So he said, neither will I turn my back on you when I give my sermon, but I'm certainly not going to turn my back on God when I offer Mass. Well, he got called into Archbishop Sheehan's office really quickly. And Archbishop said, you either go on with the changes or you're out. And the Archbishop said, in second thought, Father Kubisch, when you retire, we'll give you some more money. We'll increase your retirement. And it didn't take Father Kubisch very long to respond, Bishop, hell is not just for a long time, it's forever. And he walked out of the bishop's office and left the diocese, and that was the story. I think it interesting that some 17 years later, that same archbishop, when we started to build our church in Omaha, he encountered me because the Omaha World Herald wanted to do a newspaper article, a feature article, front page, because we're building a new church, and this is a Catholic church, but it's the Latin Mass in the traditional way. And the reporter said, you know, listen, I'm not Catholic. I don't know what's going on. What's the difference between you guys and the Archdiocese? I said, I'll really keep it simple. We still believe that Christ founded one church, the one true church. The Archdiocese doesn't believe that anymore. That reporter went straight to Bishop Sheehan and asked him. He said, he is saying over there on Military Avenue that you guys have changed your belief. You don't believe that the Catholic Church is the one true church anymore. Is that true or false? Now he's in a dilemma, because if he says it's true, then he says that we've changed. On the other hand, if he says, no, we still believe that, then what does all his ecumenical things that he's done with the Methodists and the Lutherans and the Baptists and all those other churches in Omaha, where does that go? Where does his ecumenism go? He didn't want to offend them either. So his response was, I don't want to get into a theological debate in the newspaper. Hello, is this a yes or no question? Did you change or not change? Nothing. Just a yes or no answer. Did the answer. But getting back to this issue, just like to say with regard to the Father Kubisch and the challenges that he faced, etc. I just think that it's an important thing for us to remember that there were a number of priests, pioneers, who paved the way for preserving the Catholic faith, and that we need to continue that as well. We do need good Catholic men and women to serve God as priests and religious. We do need good Catholic families. We want Catholics to marry Catholics. And we want our children to have that Catholic atmosphere. Because the bottom line is this. It's going to be God's grace. God's grace that's going to be the deciding factor. I am just absolutely mind-boggled at the occasions of sin and the excessiveness to sin so readily available all around us. There's so many dangers to our faith, so many dangers to our morals. I don't envy parents with young children trying to raise them as Catholics in this godless and immoral society we live in. That's the reason why it's so important for us to have a good Catholic school like Mary Magdalene Queen Church and school here, a refuge to protect your children, to establish them in the faith, give them that foundation, give them that opportunity to be exposed to Catholicism, plant that seed in their heart that they'll never leave, they'll never lose, they'll always be there. No matter what happens down the line, it's always going to be there. And let's never underestimate the importance of prayer and receiving the sacraments. Parents, that's, I think, the most important thing you can try to teach your children, the importance of going to Mass, receiving the sacraments regularly, and the importance of prayer every day. Make it a habit. Because as St. Alphonsus Liguori says, that's the great means of salvation and perfection, prayer. So as we administer the sacrament of confirmation, and as we celebrate our graduates, their commencement, a new phase of their life, we just like to remind all of them about the importance of prayer. You can never underestimate the power of prayer. And as we mentioned on Ascension Thursday, the morning Mass at Mount St. Michael's, when we think of the importance of prayer, let us remind ourselves that our relationship with God is so important. Whether we be a success or failure in life is going to be a direct proportion to our relationship with God. If we're with God, if God's on our side, if God's helping us, we're going to be a success. Both spiritually, but most importantly spiritually and temporally. For those who love God, everything works out to good. And His providence will be there to guide you. So those of you who are going to be confirmed, become soldiers of Christ. Remember the importance of continuing to live your faith and study your faith and know your faith. Those of you graduating, you young ladies, remember the importance of trying to always do God's will in your life. And if you do that, things will fall into place. God's going to make it work. God's going to be there to support you. He'll keep you as you read in the